Does your basement leak only when it rains? At PermaSeal, we believe your basement should be dry all the time. For a free estimate, you know who to call, PermaSeal. 800-421-7325 or visit permaseal.net.
You know, I often speak of Miranda Devine as the bravest columnist in America, and I think for good reason. She is the columnist for the New York Post. She stood up against the bear. You know what poking the bear means? When you only have a short stick? She went into the cave, poked the bear of the CIA and the FBI, the corrupt FBI, the corrupt CIA, and stood for her newspaper and its stories on Hunter Biden and the laptop from hell. Joe Biden, the president of the United States, he was running for president then, and the whole apparatus of campaign, the political apparatus, all the media around it were joining against her. And there was Miranda by herself. She is the author of Laptop from Hell, Hunter Biden, Big Tech, and the Dirty Secrets. And she is also the author of The Big Guy, How a President and His Son Sold Out America to China, to Ukraine. The list goes on and on. Will she make it a trilogy? We'll find out, because she's our guest on the Chicago Way podcast. Joining us, as always, co-host Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN, future / baseball coach. And me, I'm John Cass, editor-in-chief of John Cass News. And I remember when I was writing at the paper supporting Miranda, and every time I would write a column supporting what the New York Post had written and the point of view of the Post that Biden and the FBI and the rest were all crooks, I could hear the whining and pouting in the voices of editors throughout the building. And I just kept going, because she's worth it. And where are you as Doge continues rolling, as Kash Patel becomes entrenched in the FBI, as Dan Bongino becomes his deputy? You're on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago Way. Absolutely.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
So as promised, here's our guest, Miranda Devine, the award-winning, I don't even know if she won an award. I don't even think she cares about journalism awards, especially now. I don't. And she's a great columnist, brave columnist, as I refer to her, of the New York Post. Miranda, welcome to the Chicago Way.
Oh, thanks so much, John. Great to be with you. And I have won the most important award, actually two of them, which are the sort of anti-Pulitzers. There's the Samizdat Prize from the
Tom Bevin.
Real Clear Politics.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yep, they're great guys. And the Bulldog Award from the MRC, the Media Research Center. So I think they're absolute prizes, and I'm very honored to have got those and very honored not to have got a Pulitzer.
I'm so glad I didn't win a Pulitzer either. And
of course you did.
What should come?
You think wrong.
I remember I I go back to this all the time when we talk, but it's, to me, essential. Both of us were columnists at major newspapers. You're still. And you had broken the most important, you and the Post broke the most important news, I'd say, in the century, which was the Hunter Biden laptop. And we did not know that it was being suppressed by the FBI, that you were being, we've eventually found out that you were censored, and people that supported you were censored. And we saw the death of journalism in that time, the journalism that we used to love, and we were told by our people we respected in our business that we should never lose our or risk our credibility because it would never be found again. And I guess journalism never wanted to find that.
Yeah, it was a really peculiar time. And I think, like a lot of things in the Trump era, we saw a lot of ugly truths about the world that, you know, even the most hard-bitten and cynical among us may not have believed were true. And one of those was how, well, the media itself, I guess we knew that they would ignore anything that was going to be detrimental to Donald Trump's opponent and inflate everything that was detrimental to him, but also that social media was so controlled by the deep state, let's call it, by the FBI, the CIA. It was, we found out later from the Twitter files when Elon Musk bought it, that it was absolutely crawling with FBI and CIA former agents and analysts. And then, of course, you know, because it was such an existential threat to their power, if Donald Trump won re-election, that they just sort of came out of the woodwork. They came out of the darkness. They showed their claws. They showed their faces. And that was most obvious when the 51 former CIA, mostly CIA intelligence officials, wrote that dishonest letter saying the laptop was Russian disinformation when they knew full well it wasn't, and using weasel words. And that letter was actually given the green light by the then sitting CIA director, Gina Haspel. And so top to bottom, that was a CIA domestic election interference program.
It made decent people sick. I know it made my brother sick.
Yes.
My brother Nicholas, who served honorably for more than 30 years with CIA and Department of State. And it made Kash Patel sick. And now he's the... I don't smoke anymore, Miranda, but this is the time when you want to roll over and have a cigarette, you know?
This is so true.
Right? It's like, I can't get over it. Jeff, what do you think of Kash Patel now? And the exploding heads, as I refer to them, like eggs in a pot left abandoned in the stove. Jeff, I don't know. Have we lost Jeff?
I'm here, Miranda. It's great to have you, of course, always. And you know, these are bizarre times. You recently kind of turned the page on the Democrats. It sounded like in your most recent piece, because it has been, you know, dunking on the lame, because there's no one there. We've been talking about this so much that the leadership is gone, and it's just been an embarrassment. They're trying to hold up all the different appointments, and that's, as we've seen, you know, that's not going to happen. That's not going to work, and people like Kash Patel are in place. Where do you see the biggest impact right now on Democrats who are reeling? Like, where are they hurting the most, do you think? Because it's hard to pinpoint one specific place.
Yeah, I mean, like John said, it's just the winds keep coming from the Trump administration, and he's put in place all these absolute animals like Kash Patel, who just they know how things work. They know how dirt, there's no naivety anymore like there was in his first term that everything was going to be business as usual. You know, Pete Hegseth, Pam Bondi, they're all tough guys and they've all been targeted themselves. So they know that it's not retribution, but it's putting America to rights. It's Elon Musk is a fantastic tool to use to do that because, you know, his audit of the federal government has just uncovered so much abuse and corruption. And, you know, it's all coming from the Democrats. So they are absolutely panicking, not just because they've lost power, but because their little grifts are becoming, getting exposed. We saw, what was it? How much was it that, $2 billion that this non-profit got last year after it had just opened and had $100 in the bank that Stacey Abrams is involved with. You know, time after time, we are seeing the Democrats exposed as not just incompetent, not just far left, but deeply corrupt. And anybody who knew anything about Joe Biden and the way he was protected and sort of just allowed to ply his trade for many decades and earn tens of millions of dollars for his family would just know that that's just the way Democrats do business.
The addition of Dan Bongino now is like... In a way, I can't help it, I'm starting to laugh because I can't believe that this is going on, you know, with Dan Bongino, who's like a take no prisoners, right up the hill, full speed ahead type of guy, is now deputy director of the FBI. So they have, at least they have communicators who are able to articulate a cogent thought and press it forward. And that's something that the Democrats don't have now that I guess Obama's in his cave. I don't know if he'll ever come out, but I don't see anyone else doing it. Do you?
No, I think Obama's got problems with his library. So maybe he's spending time looking at that.
Well, anyway.
Yeah, that's not surprising. I mean, there's a guy whose cachet has peaked in political power here in Chicago. John, I think, is leaning away from never coming back. You know, it is interesting to talk about. It's win after win after win. Do you see anything that is surprising, even in that realm, that things are going this seemingly well for Trump? I mean, is there? I feel like we're missing something. You know, you always like, it's just too good. It seems to be too well for him. Something's got to become missing, but it seems like it's not. I mean, it's hard to find a place where he's not fulfilling his promises as a candidate now as, you know, the president.
Yeah. Look, I think in his last term, we used to call it Trump time because he was just, you know, he's just a no-nonsense businessman, makes decisions, acts quickly. And so that was good, but this time is different. Trump time is multiplied by 1,000 because it seems like the entire 4 years since Donald Trump's been out of office, he's been thinking and planning. He's got people like Stephen Miller thinking and planning, a whole raft of super smart, super cynical, as in they have no illusions about the permanent bureaucracy. And they have gone in with a fine-tooth comb and a big axe, and they are just laying waste to the deep state. And obviously there are going to be, you know, like a coiled snake. I'm sure that CIA and the elements of the FBI, the State Department, are just biding their time, lying in wait. But certainly, you know, the very, very deep into that system is being cut away and found out. And Elon Musk, it's kind of barbaric, you know, Elon Musk telling public servants that they have to write him an email telling them what they did the last week. I mean, they're also outraged about it. And, you know, I sort of feel like it's, I cringe a little bit. But on the other hand, it's effective. And any federal public servants who think that they're going to just be along for a cushy ride and have two jobs and work from home and not do anything, they just better find a new line of work.
We are speaking to Miranda Devine, excellent and brave columnist of the New York Post and author of two fantastic books, The Big Guy, How a President and His Son Sold Out America, and the famous laptop from hell, Hunter Biden, Big Tech, and the Dirty Secrets. Miranda, these letters from Musk almost have I take umbrage with them. If I were working for the federal government, I would think that Miss Umbridge from Harry Potter was sending them. And for those of you who don't know Harry Potter, she is the character of Miss Umbridge, is the ultimate bureaucrat who is like trying to destroy people in a sort of passive aggressive way. And as a contrarian, always, I guess as a conservative, I had to be a contrarian, and that was beat into me. I just don't like that kind of passive-aggressive deal that he's doing. But, I mean, all power to him. I support what they're doing. I mean, get these people back to work, for God's sake. Get them into the office, 9 to 5, like everyone else in the country.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. I feel uncomfortable about it, and I certainly, if I were in that position, would not like it. But, you know, I guess it's just the attitude. You know, Donald Trump just put out a meme mocking people for complaining about it, and it's really the signal to the federal bureaucracy. And, you know, in Washington, D.C., as Stephen Miller says, 95% of them voted for Kamala Harris. So you're not hurting your friends, by and large. And I guess they, you know, their ilk deserve it after what Donald Trump has been through. I guess that's the way he feels. And he has a short amount of time, maybe only 2 years, to just get rid of the resistors and clean it up, save a whole lot of money, and make the whole burdensome and cumbersome and vastly overly expensive apparatus work for the American people. And so I guess you've got to be brutal and uncouth while you're doing that, much as it might disturb our sensibilities.
Well, you know, think of the Bush family. They were, I would say that they fashioned themselves to be gentlemen. Okay, old school gentlemen. Even though the fortune was won by, in the good old fashioned days before gentlemen were part of the American enterprise, and so Bush was that gentle person, or at least formally so, but they walked all over him. They walked all over him, and here comes Trump, uncouth, vulgar, like a Jacksonian figure, like right out of the frontier.
Yeah.
All he needs is a Bowie knife to pick his teeth with, and he's just kicking them in the special purpose and loving it. And I think that's what we need, because aren't we spending so much money? We're spending so much in interest now in our debt that our interest exceeds our military spending. Isn't that something that we should be repeating time and time again to reinforce to the American people how dangerous all this stuff is, and this anti-Doge thing is all about protecting that status quo that we cannot afford. Miranda?
Absolutely. I mean, no one ever talks about it, and no one wants to talk about it really during election campaigns.
Right.
But Donald Trump, being a businessman, knows that, what is it, $35 trillion in debt is just unsustainable. And so he has plans, big plans about how to solve it, and partly using his sort of idea, which is out of the box, of reciprocal tariffs, which has got everyone's sort of head in a spin. But his Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent, who's absolutely brilliant, you could not have a more brilliant man in that position, you know, he's going along with it, even though tariffs are kind of anathema to his school of thinking, because reciprocal tariffs, as Scott Bessent says, should mean that tariffs actually topple around the world, because countries open their markets to America, and therefore America opens its markets to those countries. And that will make a lot of money, save a lot of money for the country. And, you know, he just is going about this like a businessman that has bought into a broken down old company that's bloated and on its knees and bankrupt. And he's going to fix it. He's a turnaround guy. And he's brought in the smartest consultants that you could ever find in the world. Elon Musk, unbelievably lucky that America has someone, you know, Elon Musk, probably certainly the richest man in the world, probably the smartest man in the world, a total autist who has no finesse. You know, he's just coming in with his laser eyes and his team of, I don't know, 20-year-old autists, super high IQ kids. And they are just doing things that nobody else has been able to do for decades, if ever, and doing what would take any normal group of people decades, doing it in weeks, in days. So that's, you know, that's a short-term medicine that the federal government has to take. It's like a chemotherapy. And at the end of it, let's hope that it emerges, and I think it will, stronger and leaner and more able to do what it's meant to do and live a longer life.
That's the dream, right? Right. What do you think? I mean, we've talked a lot of domestic stuff here, but the, you know, international world sees the U.S. as, you know, the U.S. I mean, we're the big guy in the room more often than not. How do you think he's playing on the world stage here? I mean, he's come in essentially ending, it sounds like, the Ukrainian war less than 30 days almost. I mean, that's what he was promising, things of that nature. Where do you feel, or have you heard people say about his international presence?
Well, again, like a dose of Epsom salts. I think J.D. Vance's speech last week in Munich really, just, you could see from the faces of those Eurocrats that they were aghast, and they were already expecting that Donald Trump would come in like he did last time and, you know, stomp around like King Kong and tell them that they have to, you know, up their defense spending, et cetera. But they didn't expect this new version, Trump 2.0, which is leaner, meaner, sharper and more determined, and has all these surrogates who are just as determined and probably more silver-tongued. I mean, J.D. Vance is Yale-educated, speaks extremely articulately. Pete Hegseth, head of the Pentagon, you know, like he was a Fox star for a good reason, which is that he's hugely articulate and telegenic. And the two of them with this 1-2 punch last week to Europe, which was, no, Ukraine's not getting into NATO. And hey, if you want our money, and if you want us to back you with these security guarantees, Europe, if you want to remain our ally, then start acting like, you know, you are an ally and not the enemy that we're against, because you've lost the values that Americans hold dear on, you know, free speech and free elections. So you had one of the Eurocrats just a few days before, or a week or so before JD arrived, saying, oh, we didn't like the election in Romania, so we cancelled it. We can do the same thing with Germany. No, you know, you don't get to be America's ally and be a complete a totalitarian.
What happens when you cancel elections is like when you suppress news. The people get upset and it starts bubbling up like irrepressible, and the bubbling continues until it confounds the established order so that the status quo falls apart. Look at Germany now. They have conservatives win the elections. The center-right coalition is in, and the hard right is surging, all because of their censorship, all their disdain, the typical leftist disdain of common people. And the response is not one of stability, I think. What do you think?
You're so right. And I mean, I think Margaret Brennan, when she was interviewing Marco Rubio, kind of proved that when she's so historically illiterate. She says, oh, don't you think, Marco Rubio, that, you know, we need censorship Nazi Germany, what'd she say? Nazi Germany was a product of not enough censorship. And I mean, the opposite was the case, obviously.
Yes.
You know, Weimar Germany tried very much to censor the Nazis and suppress them, and that just made their toxic message into forbidden fruit. People didn't know what they were saying, but thought it must be good if the government didn't like it. Then, of course, when the Nazis took power, they eliminated all open media. So, and, you know, propagandized everybody. So that's what you get. With censorship, you get the Nazis. You don't stop the Nazis. You get them. You foster them. You encourage them. And, you know, I don't think AfD in Germany are the Nazis. I mean, it's led by a lesbian who's married to, a migrant, of color. So, you know,
they're Nazis. I think a very good job.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, AfD doubled their vote from 10 to 20%, which is, you know, so one in five Germans voted for what their equivalent of their CIA, their intelligence people, all their media, all their political class were telling them was the Nazis, the Hitlers. That's not the case. And it's just that, you know, after Angela Merkel opened the floodgates to the wave of millions of basically Muslim military-aged men from North Africa, you know, and all the social dislocation and the gang rapes, etc., that's come from that, and the terrorist attacks daily, it seems, in Europe, they've had problems because the people, the populace, want to stop the illegal migration. They want to stop migration, I think, altogether, but especially this illegal migration. And their political betters refuse to countenance that. They refuse to allow them to complain about it. They completely ignore the people. And the only way they can do that is with censorship. So, of course, any party that comes up the side and says, we're anti-immigration, is going to do very well. And that's what AfD has done. And, you know, I mean, the so-called Conservative Party was actually Angela Merkel's party, and we would call it a rhino party. And, yes, they've got the best showing of the German election over the weekend. They came in with about 30%, but they need to ally with another party. And by rights, they should be, if they heeded the public's will, they would ally with AfD. But, you know, they promised before the election, or alluded before the election, to the fact that they would never get into bed with such a toxic far-right party. So they may ally with the left, which would be an utter betrayal.
Let's hope not. Let's hope common sense, the people of Europe get common sense, because if they don't, disaster awaits. Just like here in this country, in America, we're so close. We were so close to disaster. Can you imagine how close we were, Miranda?
My so
God,
close.
I mean, oh God,
what a disaster! It was 4 years. He did. Joe Biden did so much damage to this country in 4 years. It was the one thing he was good at.
Well, that's why I call them China Joe, because of your book.
Yes. Yes.
Now the
Ukraine Joe.
Yeah, Ukraine Joe. Now, where is he in the criminal defense mode? He's not been pardoned, right? Jill Biden has not been pardoned.
Mm.
Right? They're open targets, are they not? I don't see how they could be targets politically in a political sense, but...
Yes, it's interesting that Donald Trump has said a couple of times... just made that point that you just did, that, well, Joe Biden didn't pardon himself. So I think he's dangling it out there. And look, as Kash Patel, John Ratcliffe, Tulsi Gabbard, as they start opening up the books and having a look in the deep files of the FBI, for instance, where there's a lot of Biden criminality that was buried, maybe they'll find something else.
Let's hope so. Now, we can't keep you all morning, but...
Yeah, we'd love to, though.
I do, I know.
Me too.
But I do have a couple more questions quickly to ask you. Number one, I see in your biography, that you're a lover, not only of mom, like of children, but of dogs. I see that you love dogs. Am I correct in that?
I love dogs. Yes, of course. Who couldn't?
Well, we had our dog Zeus, the wonder dog, a great German short-haired pointer, stubborn as the German people, but but good.
Very handsome.
You know, handsome and good. And he passed. And now I want a new dog. Betty says that I'm, because you know I've had the stroke and everything, that I'm on. I'm walking with a cane, that I'm not able to handle a Rottweiler or a Doberman Pinscher. And I said, well, why not an English Bulldog? Because that's me, you know, we don't have to call him Churchill or Winston, but we have an English Bulldog will not outrun me, you know, even with a cane. But Betty's like, no, we can't have an English Bulldog, because they're fat, they snore, and they pass gas.
Yes, that's a very good thought.
What? Headline breaking, Miranda Devine shoots down Cass's idea for a bulldog. Okay, great. Now what do I do?
They are quite ugly, and they do make horrible sniffling noises with their noses. But I mean, if you're a man, so you wouldn't really care about the aesthetics that much. But the dog that I had was the most perfect dog I think ever, and he died last year, Biggles.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. And he was very old and had a wonderful life. But we got him. He was a rescue dog. We got him at 6 months, and he was a perfect combination, I think, of a border collie, which is a highly intelligent herding dog, sheep dog, beautiful black and white colors, and a Labrador, a black Labrador, and which are also intelligent, but very sweet and docile. And he had all the good qualities of the border collie and none of the bad ones, and all the good qualities of the Labrador, and wasn't greedy or lazy. So, I mean, they're a little bit, the thing about them is border collies is they're a bit boisterous. So when they're young, like they need training because they're highly intelligent.
Yeah.
But gosh, what, you know, having a super intelligent dog, I think, is like having an intelligent friend. Once you've had an intelligent friend, you can't really go back to the dummies. And I don't think I could have a dumb dog.
Oh, I grew up with one of those, that perfect blend of collie and lab. And it's like having a groundskeeper, you know, wandering around and a friend, like. They're very good dogs. Oh, my gosh. I love it. John, I think maybe so you're not looking for a poodle or anything or a toy dog, right? You want something that you have to walk?
I might be walking with a cane occasionally, but I haven't given up my sense of manhood. There's not going to be a poodle name in my cast house. No way.
Well, the only other problem with those, the dogs I just mentioned, is they do shed a lot of hair.
Yeah.
So you need one of those robots to scoot around the house and vacuum.
Well, then we'll have to do that.
Yes.
I have to do that. Well, I have to train a vacuum robot to do that.
Poodles are clever, though, apparently.
I
don't like their the way they look, but you can cross them with, you know, a Labrador, and you get a Labradoodle, which doesn't shed hair and is very sweet.
Them. My brother Nicholas, who you've heard me talk about, his wife has Labradoodles at home, and I'm really not interested. What I wanted,
it's a girly dog.
Yeah, what I wanted was like the Doberman Pinscher, which is smart and courageous, but they would pull me over and then they would drag me until they got trained, and I can't afford to be dragged.
Yeah. That's so true. You could get the Dog Whisperer in to do it for you.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, an Airedale, John. They're curly. Oh, they don't shed.
Because I'm also a gardener. And I can't have a terrier because I don't want them to dig holes in my beautiful garden, for God's sake. Otherwise, I would have the black and tan dog Tiny that killed how many hundreds of rats in London.
Yes.
In 1850, like the great Tiny, you know, but I can't.
Yeah, I must say our dog was hopeless at culling the possums that used to devour my garden in Australia. So he liked to bark a lot, but he wasn't much good. Actually, he did kill a couple, I must admit, but not enough.
Well, I'm sure that you did something with the meat. You didn't just have your husband throw it out in a wrap it in a plastic bag, did you? The way Betty had me go finding the rabbits that Zeus killed, and she's like, don't bring them in. Put them in a plastic bag.
Yes, no, that's what we had to do. Well, I mean, my husband took care of it. I really wasn't involved at all in any of that, but he was very impressed that Biggles had the instinct when this possum fell down from the tree to instantly, as a pup, know exactly what to do, how to kill this possum in an instant. Our gentle, darling dog was blooded, and I was a little bit horrified. But my husband very quickly disposed of the evidence. So I don't think you could eat possums. They're pretty disease-filled.
I don't think of Miranda Devine like Granny Clampett. There's not that connection. Miranda, you've been so good to be with us today. Thank you so much. And
what
do we have to look forward to your next book? What's coming up?
Well, thank you for having me. I've really enjoyed it. I am pondering, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's almost like there's a trilogy there between Laptop from Hell, the big guy, and, you know, just watching Donald Trump lay waste to the deep state. We haven't seen how the story comes out, but I think, you know, the third part of the story, you know, the vanquishing the deep state is I hope how the story turns out, because that will make a true horror tale into a happy fairy tale.
Well, I can't wait to read it, and I would hope that there would be something after the colon, like buy the book, not purchase the book, buy the book. Because I'll never forget what's her name, April so-and-so, that had the meeting of the collusionists in the White House with Obama, Clapper, Comey, and all the rest of them, and said, we did everything by the book.
And
as if we believe that. Anyway, Miranda Devine, New York Post columnist, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks so much, John. Thanks, Jeff.
Bye, Miranda.
Bye.
Take care.